Bob Mueller's term in office will last longer than my own, and the next 10 years will bring new forms of crime, new threats of terror from beyond our borders and within them. The tools of law enforcement will change as well. The FBI must be ready to protect Americans from new types of criminals who will use modern technology to defraud and disrupt our society.
President George W. Bush speaking Thursday from the Rose Garden. Robert Swan Mueller III will be the sixth person to lead the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Dan Shore is away this morning. John Heilman of Wired Magazine joins us from our bureau in New York. Good morning to you, John.
Hi, Susan.
Two events seem to dovetail this week. The FBI opens a new chapter with a new chief to replace Louis Freeh, and a former agent admits treachery. Let's start with Robert Mueller. He is a former U.S. attorney, former assistant attorney general. He served under Republicans and Democrats, lots of experience with the Justice Department and extensive experience with the FBI, but he's not of the FBI. So what do you think, a steep learning curve?
In a word, very steep learning curve, Susan. I think, you know, you've just enumerated his many qualifications for this job. He is, by all accounts, Bob Mueller, an estimable figure. But, you know, he knows the FBI well, but as you say, he's not of the FBI. And that's, I think, a real shortcoming, potentially. Reforming, you know, these big Washington entrenched, bureaucratic, ossified institutions is hard enough under any circumstances. But the FBI may be the toughest of all. It's, you know, it's huge. There's 30,000 employees there, 10,000, 11,000 agents, a $3.5 billion budget, and has expanded dramatically under the period of time that Louis Freeh ran that organization. It's also insular and conservative and rigid and really quite self-righteous. It doesn't suffer outsiders gladly. And for all of his experience, Bob Mueller is an outsider. The other big problem for him, I think, is that he has been seen in the past as being somewhat of a reflexive defender of the FBI. And I think that what most people agree is that the FBI needs right now is a critic, a reformer, a kind of obviously a constructive critic, a friendly critic, but a critic nonetheless. And so the questions about him are twofold. I mean, is he both up to the task, and does he really understand what that task should be?
Yeah. Let's talk about the spy business. Former FBI agent Robert Hansen. He has until his sentencing day, which is January 11th, to tell the government what secrets he gave to the Russians, also how he went about doing that. He's avoiding the death penalty by pleading guilty. The federal government is also going to guarantee that Mr. Hansen's wife gets his pension. Also, the family gets to keep their home, other property they have in Virginia. Is this a good deal or what?
Well, I mean, I think it's a pretty good deal. I mean, for Hansen, I mean, he still does get life without parole. He's going to be punished pretty severely. I'm not sure what real purpose would have been gained by putting him to death. What they gain from this deal, what we all gain from this deal, is some sense of, you know, how he could have gotten away with this high-level espionage for such a long time in the modern era. So what officials will find out from him is, you know, a very vivid picture of how Russian intelligence and counterintelligence works, but also how someone at a high rank in the FBI could have gotten away with something like this. And that's something that could be very valuable information to a lot of people, including Bob Mueller.
We need to talk about the economy next, John. Lower than expected earnings reports, a tumble on Wall Street. Also this week, labor statistics show an increase in unemployment. Now it's 4.5%. It means some 114,000 less jobs in June. Is this really as bad as it sounds, or is it just bad because we've been on such an economic boom for such a long time?
Well, it's certainly, there's no way to spin these numbers to make them sound great or hopeful or optimistic. I mean, I think a lot of people earlier this year had hoped by at this point in the year we'd be starting to see a turnaround. There had been some signs of that, and now those signs have pretty much evaporated. These numbers, I mean, there is a real recession going on in certain big, important parts of the economy. The manufacturing sector is in recession. The technology industry out where I live in Silicon Valley, the layoffs and the missed earnings reports, you know, they come daily, and the carnage is really quite stunning. At the same time, it's not yet clear that the country as a whole is even in a recession. It's clearly in a slowdown, but not for sure in a recession. And if it is a recession, it's a pretty mild one. So, I mean, I think that, you know, if you think back to before the 90s boom, 4.5% unemployment was considered pretty good.
Yeah.
And certainly not a disaster.
Well, the administration says it's all just temporary anyway. And when the tax relief checks start coming in, that'll jumpstart the economy. But is this really a big political problem? problem, though, for the administration?
Yeah, right, Susan. When you get that $230 check, you'll be able to buy a few extra Domino's pizzas, right? I mean, I think, you know, it's a big long-term problem for the administration, and downturns are never good politically for any administration, but it's particularly bad for this one because it kind of shows up the willful kind of perversity of its policies. It has passed a tax cut which is too small in the short term to have any real effect in the short term, and it's dangerously large in the long term, and we're already starting to see that. The numbers now, later this month, the Congressional Budget Office will revise its budget figures, and everyone thinks that they're going to be revised dramatically downward, and they're going to show that all of these surpluses that the Bush administration used to justify the long-term effects of this tax cut are all going to be gone. So the tax cut, which was their centerpiece, I don't think it's going to provide much of a short-term boost for them, and in the long term, it looks terrible. If you consider the effect on these numbers of a relatively mild downturn, just imagine how bad things will be if and when we get to a hardcore recession.
Mm-hmm. About science, the White House is under increasing pressure now to make a decision about where it stands on stem cell research. That's research that uses cells from human embryos. The National Institutes of Health and more Republican lawmakers have urged the president to pay for that kind of research. But inside the White House, there's some opposition. Is the administration out of step with the scientific community at what is really a crucial crossroad for research?
Well, it's certainly right. This is a crucial crossroads on stem cell research. I think the scientific consensus is overwhelmingly strong that stem cells pose some of the most incredible potential for curing diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. I mean, diseases that inflict a huge amount of suffering and have been considered incredibly intractable for a long time. The Bush administration is not so much out of step with the scientific community. It seems to sort of not even know there's a parade going on. There are scientists, both Republican and Democrat, who have been watching this administration for the first 6 months and have been coming to the conclusion that it is one of the most profoundly anti-science administrations they have ever seen. What's more interesting, in a way, is that Bush is also, you know, really coming down against on this issue. He's coming down against even a lot of pro-life conservatives who don't consider the stem cell research a problem. He's siding with very intense hardcore pro-lifers and also with the Catholic hierarchy. And that's where we get to the, you know, what the politics of this are. This is about political advisors in the White House thinking that Bush has a great chance to solidify his hold over the Catholic vote. And this is politics triumphing over science, 100%.
Yeah. In a minute that's left to us, John, let's do some business. A decision made overseas this week put an end to a mega merger attempt here at home. The European Union officially rejected a merger between General Electric and Honeywell. It was the end of a deal that looked dead weeks ago, and these companies play complementary roles in aviation, but Europe saw it as maybe hurting competition on the continent. Is this a difference and philosophy between Europe and the U.S. in how to do business?
Well, it has always been the case that the European economic policymakers, industrial policymakers, have been more dirigiste. They have been more interventionist in the economy than the American ones. The American policies have always been more free market towards mergers and acquisitions. In the past, though, this wasn't such a big deal because the global economy wasn't so thoroughly integrated. Now that it is, the rubber is really hitting the road. And it's a situation where it looks like we're going to have conflicts like this again and again. Look for the same kind of conflict again in the Microsoft case, where the Europeans may want to take Microsoft on, and that will really annoy the Republicans in Washington as much as this one has.
Thank you very much, John Heilman of Wired Magazine, speaking from New York.